It's near impossible to own a cat without falling in love with it.
Welcome to the Busy Girls Book Club. We are reviewing all of the internet's most popular books and letting you know whether or not we think you have the time to tackle them as a busy young professional. I'm Caitlin.
I'm Catherine.
And I'm Casey, and today we are reading A Cozy Fantasy by TikTok-beloved author Heather Fawcett. So the book is called Agnes Auberts, I think is how you pronounce it, or it's French.
Aubert.
Agnes Aubert.
Aubert.
Audiobook early, I got you.
Yeah, I listened to the audiobook too, and the audiobook has strong French pronunciation, and I was like, oh, okay. Okay. Agnes Aubert's Mystical Cat Shelter. Heather Fawcett also wrote the Emily Wilde series, which Caitlin and Catherine both really like. And the book is similar in tone. There's kind of like an awkward type A organized girly running this cat shelter. And she meets, she's looking for a place to stay with her and her cats. She gets evicted from her last apartment because there was a magical showdown. Because magicians in this universe are rare, but they do exist. But people hate them because they cause tons of destruction. And so, yeah, she's sort of traumatized and looking for a place to house her shelter, which no one wants because during this era in France, cats were considered pests, similar to rats.
Montreal.
Oh, Montreal. Sorry. All the French keeps making me think France. They're in Canada. Just Montreal.
French Canadian.
To be fair, the way they said it in the audiobook didn't even sound like Montreal.
No, it took me a second. I probably wouldn't have recognized it if it weren't for Heated Rivalry. Anyway, really long intro for the summary of cat lover seeks new apartment. And she finds it, and there might be a little bit more magic there than she would have wanted.
Hence, mystical cat shelter.
Yeah. Okay, so did you guys bring reviews to read?
Yes. And for once, I have a 5-star review. And it's okay. Goodreads. And it says, so much cat, 10 out of 10. I would die for Banshee.
I have one and then one I'll read part of. A 4-star from Fable. Cute, adorable, fun, fantastic for cat owners, honestly. Fawcett writes some of my favorite socially confounded FMCs and MMCs who are rather hopelessly gone for them. Fact. I'm just going to read the top part of this one. It's a 4-star. This book honestly felt like a hug, like the coziest kind. Nothing loud or dramatic happens, but it still had me completely inhaling it. The whole vibe just felt like a little safe place I could escape into for a bit.
Yeah. Nothing loud or dramatic. Do they make it to the end?
I mean, compared to other like fantasy novels, that's pretty tame, but yes, you're right.
Some loud and dramatic shit happens.
Okay. Catherine, did you read yours?
Yes.
You
didn't read?
Okay, you did. Okay, I have a bunch today, but they're thematic, and I'm just going to read a few.
I'm scared.
No, I do have some 1-stars, which you guys probably saw this a lot, too.
Oh, I know what you're going to say.
Yeah.
Yep. Most of my ideas for spells come from one of my novels, says one of the main characters at the end of the book. Is this Heather Fawcett's confession that she lifted 99% of the plot from Howl's Moving Castle?
yeah, there were a lot of reviews, both negative and positive.
And positive.
This is Howl's Moving Castle with cats, which I haven't actually seen or read.
Same.
I have seen Howl's Moving Castle. I will say they are extremely similar, like extremely similar characters, extremely similar kind of like time, place bending things, but they were different enough in just sort of theme and general arc that it did not bother me. However, everyone in the 1-star reviews is bothered.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I did notice that theme.
That story has some very loyal fans.
Yes. One of the most beloved movies from one of the most beloved movie houses. So anyway, my second review, also 1 star along the same lines. I hope Heather Fawcett gives every single cent she makes from this book to Diana Wynne Jones, who wrote the book Howl's Moving Castle is based off of. The next ones are 2 stars. These ones are crowd pleasers for the cat people. This one kind of shocked me. 2 stars. This book single-handedly made me dislike cats.
How dare.
Can you believe that?
That's crazy. This book is like a love story for cats.
Yeah. I was like, that is a crazy takeaway from this book.
Like, most people probably finish it and go adopt a cat.
Yeah.
Right. Right.
Getting a third, but
I know it did. It made me sad with my ogre of a dog that I have haunting my house. That I can never have a cat.
He just has the personality of a cat. It's fine.
Yes. And you can't have cats. You're allergic.
I know. I've been cursed by the universe. That's what I learned from this book.
Yes.
Though I do love peaches, to be clear. Okay. This is my last review. 2 stars, came for the cats and unfortunately only stayed for the cats. So,
okay.
At least someone who liked the cats.
You know, I liked the cats.
I liked the cats too.
Their personalities are fun.
Yeah.
She's clearly someone who spends a lot of time with her cats because she knows
a lot. Cats.
Yes.
I forget. Very her cat is like on the cover of the book. She worked her own cat in. I don't remember its name.
Oh, that's so cute.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can definitely tell that she spends. It's like insanely realistic depiction of a lot of different cats.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I was like, oh, yep, that one's sitting next to me right now.
Yeah, Catherine and Caitlin are both cat people, if you guys hadn't picked that up.
They've been in the background of almost all these episodes.
Or the foreground. Okay, well, overall, not Heather Fawcett's highest rated book, but Goodreads, 3.91 out of 5 stars, Fable, 3.5 out of 5, and Storygraph, 4.01 out of 5. So you can see where the cat people are. They're on Storygraph. What did you guys rate it?
I'll go first because I think I have the highest rating. I gave it 5 stars. It's just so cozy and it hit me at a good time. And I was having a reading slump and didn't want to read anything, but I ate this book up. So I think it more hit me at the exact right time than it being like a perfect, flawless book. So it's 5 stars for the vibes.
Okay. Casey?
I can go next. I give it 4 stars. I know. So you guys can breathe a sigh of relief. I actually really enjoyed this. It was like slow during the beginning. I did find the main character a little bit annoying. And I also, there is this like slight romance that I just honestly didn't think needed to be in the book. However, I was really pleasantly surprised by how surprising I found the plot. Like, parts of it were predictable, but there were parts I didn't see coming. There was like, I don't want to spoil too much, but there is essentially an evil cat. Like, I was shocked by that and like thrilled because I've never had like the lovable sidekick be like a villain sidekick. I thought that was just like so great.
Villain origin story.
Yeah. I was like, no fucking way. So I thought that this book was good. It's cozy fantasy, I think, is in general not my genre, but I actually liked this more than I like Emily Wilde. And so, yeah.
Whoa.
Wow.
I enjoyed it. I enjoyed the magic. I enjoyed the male main character. And so, yeah, I thought it was a good book.
Well, I also gave it 4 stars. I think I prefer Emily Wilde. I do think a lot of my enjoyment was taken away by the audiobook. Mm-hmm. While the pronunciations of all the French words were on point because the gal reading it had spoke French, it was the most dry and straightforward reading of a book. I had to put it on 1.5 speed to feel like I was reading it at a normal pace. Like, I don't know. I think that took away some of it, but I still really love the storyline. Love the cats. I love that there were some really morally gray characters in here. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes single-minded goals cause you to be morally gray other places. I don't know. I love the sister relationship. And yeah, I didn't mind the main character. I thought she was kind of fun. For everyone listening, she's 35 and a widower. So I love representation of someone midway through their life, not just like an 18-year-old heroine. So
yeah,
I mean, honestly, minus the widow part, she's living my dream.
Yeah. I mean,
we have. For context, we went Operation Bounce House half his age yesteryear to this.
Guys, we're breathing a sigh of relief at the moment.
Yeah. I think we all really needed to read something that was a little bit more chill.
Light and airy and fun.
Yeah.
Picture Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, the movie. That's literally.
Yeah. It's a good show.
I also just think Howl's Moving Castle with cats.
But you're on the positive side of that instead of the negative side.
Yeah, I mean, I do get why people are a little annoyed because about halfway through the book, I was like, this is a lot like Howl's Moving Castle. I have, however, not read the book Howl's Moving Castle, which I think is part of the disparity because the book and the movie are both a little different, but it's very much sort of like chaotic neutral, sort of like in his own world, wizard boy with grandmotherly, motherly sort of old before her age, you know, organized girl enter into a chaotic universe together. Like, and so it's very similar. There's stuff in the magic system that's also very similar. But like the feeling that I get from watching Howl's Moving Castle and just sort of the way the story unfolds to me was very different than this book. Like this book just felt like a different kind of narrative, even if there were strong similarities. Like, I don't know. I just, to me, it wasn't similar to the point that I was bothered, but many people were.
So. But also many people were very excited that their similarities were there.
Yeah, to me it felt like more of like a nod. I also think some of the people who are mad are a little bit like over attributing some of these dynamics. Like type A with chaotic neutral is like not that common of like a character pairing. And so
yeah, but she's done it before.
Right. That's what I'm like. I feel like Emily Wilde had a similar kind of dynamic characters.
Yeah.
Which is part of why it didn't bother me. Cause I was like, okay, I think it's a little unfair to just like suggest anyone who does this is stealing from Howl's Moving Castle. But
yeah,
I mean, it's a very similar main character duo to Emily Wilde. However, this time the female main character has a little bit more social prowess.
Mm-hmm.
And the male main
character
is a little more broody.
Yeah. The hermit.
Yeah. Yeah.
He just wants to stay in his library with his little gadgets.
Yeah.
I mean,
it's the wizard who's on the spectrum in this one and doesn't really like to hug, but is doing his best.
The hugging was very good.
True. Fact.
Okay. Well, do you guys want to do our non-spoiler discussion questions?
Let's do it.
First one is more plot or character driven? Question mark.
It's more plot driven.
It's a plot.
Yeah. It's very plot.
I mean, she's thrust into a world she didn't ask for and despises magic and suddenly is thrust with it and has to hide from the police.
She thought she was in control. She was not.
Not at all.
No.
But she took control the best she could.
Right. She was desperately trying to believe she was in control so that she could stay next to the magician.
She was in control of the cats, maybe, partially.
Not really.
Even. Yeah.
Most of
definitely
them?
Not one in particular.
Yeah.
Okay. Already kind of answered this one. Have you, would you read other books by the author? I read the first book in the Emily Wilde series, but did not continue reading on from there.
I read all three, and it was supposed to be a trilogy, and turns out she's writing another one, so I'm kind of mad.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'll read it, so. I really love that trilogy.
I've read 2.5 books in that trilogy, so I started the third and didn't finish it. I'm 20% in, and I started it when it came out, so it's been a fucking while. My library hold,
the third one is the least interesting.
Yeah, the library hold ran out and it was real boring. They were just being very mundane in the fairy world, and I was like, are you kidding me?
I'm about to go to Iceland and I'm just like, Emily Wilde, Emily Wilde.
It's very Emily Wilde energy. You're gonna have so much fun.
I'm going to the place where they say the hidden folk live.
Pretty cool.
Anyway, I like how much of it's steeped in real lore. This one, yes. Not as much.
No.
Yeah, no, not as much. But I like that it's a standalone. I like good standalone books. Is it
a standalone? She said the other was a trilogy. It was a little open-ended.
Well, I feel like it ended in a bow.
It could. It was kind of written where it could go either way.
I hope it's standalone. I feel like
it could be continued if she wanted to, mm-hmm. but
I could tell you what book 2 would be about.
Yeah. Okay, so question number 3, how was the pacing of the book? How long did it take you to read?
I read it in like 4 sittings over a couple of days.
I listened to it over a couple of days. Once I got it to a speed that was appropriate for the girl reading it, it was
hope.
Yeah, I also finished it in like a day and a half. So pretty easy to get through.
Yeah.
No complaints.
And it wasn't something like you had to pay attention, but not like some of the other fantasies we read where like if you miss a detail, you've missed a plot point. This was like one you could kind of like have on while doing other things.
Yeah. It was very pleasant. All right. Would you watch a movie or TV show of the book?
Yes.
I feel like it was written to be a movie. I was thinking that while I was reading it.
It has sort of like Harry Potter vibes to me.
Hence my nod to Fantastic Beasts.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Moose Commander, get in this movie right now.
Right. Yeah, very like hidden wizarding world and like a delightful muggle with her enchanted cats. Like,
I mean, if Eddie Main was a brunette, he would be the main character guy.
Mm-hmm. Yes. I mean, the main character is that sort of like oblivious scholar type. Like, he's like a scientist. So
I love it.
Yes. Wizard scientist that just likes to take things apart.
Perfect.
Just wants to read his books and tinker, guys.
He doesn't want to interact with humans.
Leave him alone. And yet he keeps having to save the world. Ugh,
after destroying it. It's fine.
Right. After also being sort of at fault. Fair. But
he's saving it from himself. But
okay. Well, I think that brings us to our busy girl rating. Where are you guys at?
I'm sticking with my 5. It's easy to read. I think it's for everyone. I would recommend this book for everyone who wants to get into the fantasy world. Like, it's easy, cozy. It's like candy.
I'm honestly going to up mine to a 5. I agree.
And that's crazy. This never happens. I'm going to agree on the 5. I think that this is a really good just give busy a girl perfect book.
Busy girls rating? The rare? It actually so got rare. Better recently because we gave Emma M. Lyon it.
Well, that's, yeah.
But otherwise, I'm looking. It's been over a year since that's happened outside of Emma M. Lyon.
Oh my God. Perfect busy girls book.
It's easy to finish. It's light going down. It's compelling, but not too involved. I think it's great.
Real cozy at the end.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not a fucking downer that you have to think about.
Grab an eclair. grab a blanket and your cat. Park yourself. Yes.
I wanted an eclair so bad when I read that scene.
Dude, the audiobook, this is like the one thing they were pronouncing with like true feeling.
I can't say it that way.
And it was just like
the brioche.
Sounded so scrumptious. Yeah.
For some reason, pastries sound better when they're spoken by French people.
I mean, because I think that's what they're meant to be said.
They really salivate over the syllables. Like you're getting every letter. And so, yeah, settle down with a warm duck chocolate croissant for sure. Okay.
Spoiler time.
Spoiler alert.
There are some pretty solid twists in this book.
Yeah.
And honestly, yeah. I predicted things that didn't happen. I thought it would go harder. I predicted too hard. Put it that way.
Okay.
I predicted a lot more peril than actually happened. Right. So I did not nail it. The plot twists were actually more tame than I predicted. So they surprised me.
Yes. Same.
I don't know how to explain that, but.
I mean, we're in our spoiler alert section. So now you can just say it if you want.
What did you predict? Perilous.
I thought she'd go in the Rivenwood.
Oh, yeah.
She ended up being a magician.
I was waiting to see if she was going to become a magician.
Because they kept saying they're more powerful the older it manifests. I was like,
yeah. Yeah. I'm really glad I didn't, though.
Drawn by this, like, doing the enchantment and drawn by the Rivenwood. So that's where I'm like, book two. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Her going into the Rivenwood.
I could see her going into the Rivenwood to save him because like she's like desperately in love with him. But I don't see her being a magician. I think like the whole idea of her being drawn to it is like being drawn to power. Everyone gets a little enticed by power and by the ability to change the world around you. And she's very
one scene where she was talking about like the taste on her tongue after using the pin and how she felt. I was like,
she also felt revolted by it as well. Like it made her uncomfortable. I know.
Things make you uncomfortable.
I'm trying to like reason my way that it wouldn't do that because it would break my heart if it did, because I think she's perfect as a human. And I think she's perfect as like this magic averse, but also so
I
like
actually like what ended up happening.
Yeah. I think it's interesting because like, of course she would gear towards the magics that organize things. I like that.
Emily Wilde would have jumped right in that portal. So I was expecting that shit.
It's fair. She was like, kind of disgusted by that portal,
hell
though.
Yeah.
She was like, that's a scary place. Let's not go there.
Yep.
I liked that she was not a magician. Who I did like, best character in the whole book, His Majesty.
His Majesty was a great character. His
Majesty. Oh my God. You guys cannot even picture the way my jaw was on the floor, like listening to the chapter where he like betrays them all and like doesn't even care. And I was like,
literally
it
shows.
Wouldn't have even been that bad, except that was her like one connection to her dead husband. I was like, you.
Yes.
What an asshole cat. But cats are assholes.
But cats are assholes. And that's how you know this book was written by someone who genuinely loves cats. It's because she can recognize that they're villains and they're heroes. Okay. That's what they're like.
There are His Majesties and there are banshees in the world.
Up until that moment, I was like, oh my gosh, my cats are these two cats. Her cats are my cats. I was like, Seth is His Majesty and Millie is Banshee. Seth would never betray me because I'm the only person in the world he loves. So,
but if you say, for instance, you got married and you died and Seth was still alive,
he might betray someone. Yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, he'd betray your partner for because sure.
Seth is your person. Like His Majesty was never. No,
Seth's also the world's largest scaredy cat. So realistically, no.
Fair enough. Right.
But Banshee and Millie.
Yeah, I did not see
that like silence.
I did not see His Majesty betraying and becoming Valerie's purse like cat.
That was the best plot twist in the whole book.
That was the point where I was like, okay, this book has me for real now. Like,
and then when she still had him afterwards, it was kind of sad but happy.
That was so happy though, because like it's like her seeing that and seeing, okay, His Majesty is happy, I can move on. in peace. Like
I summoned my own banshee. She appeared.
Oh.
It is the sort of evil supervillain with a cat is sort of this trope in American media because Americans are all hopped up on dogs and hate cats, which is the wrong opinion to have. But I liked that this book kind of revisited that trope, but in a loving way, being like, yeah, a villain has a cat. The hero has a cat. There's a cat for everyone. And that's why it's great.
Every cold-hearted woman can fall in love with a cat.
It's true.
And that's why
Game recognized Game.
Yeah. You can't have one. You have to have a cat for your cat.
Mm-hmm. Literally.
Okay. Well, our main character, Agnes, is this uptight little lover girl. She's had some ups and downs in life. She's a grown woman, as Caitlin mentioned. She's not like a teenager. And she's a widower. So she's kind of in this point in her life where she's trying to keep her cat shelter alive, but she doesn't have the support of her husband anymore, who she loved very much. What did you guys think of her philosophy in life, seeing the best in people, and her shelter in Montreal?
It's perfect.
Yeah. Quite literally, she's perfect.
I connected hard with this main character, and like also just like having a ride or die sister with a husband who's also present, like I live that life. And I love just like her determination to change an entire city's mind that cat or not vermin, they're to be loved. And she like firmly believes this to the point everybody thinks she's delusional. But she's so into it, they support her anyway.
I mean, I don't totally understand complete optimist about people because I'm like a very much a realist leaning towards pessimism where I like think people are inherently selfish beings that are going to think of their self-interest first and foremost. But by the end, as she explained her logic about why she wants to see the good in people, because if she does, then all she'll see is monsters and that's not a way to live. I was like, okay, I see the logic there. And like her descriptions of like, I have to believe that people are inherently good and that we can save these cats and that we can come together as humans to like help others. Like, I was like, okay, your humanism is like just so refreshing as a main character. Without being like optimistic and like flowery rose colored glasses, she's like, no, I see people are monsters. I see monstrous things happen, but I can also see the good that's happening with it.
She's like a realist everywhere except with the cats. And then she's like, so optimistic. And I love her single mindedness.
Yeah. So I am also more of a pessimistic person. So Agnes did annoy me from time to time. I was like, babe. Also, just her self-sacrificingness grated a little bit. Like, sometimes I just don't love female characters that have those traits because I feel like it's a little bit like worshiping the feminine grind, which we all need to get away from. Like, you should take care of yourself too. However, I do think the book does a good job of framing it as her harming herself and also as a grief response. Like, the shelter is the last thing she has now that her husband is gone, and this like abusive cat she has is like the last thing that her husband loved, and it was his cat. So I think the book pulled it off. It was just, I did not universally love Agnes.
I mean, I would sacrifice myself for my family and my cats. I get it.
Cats would, I would do that.
That. Caitlin's the optimist in the group.
That's pretty bad, guys.
Yeah.
It's probably true, though. You're probably right. I'm a realist, but I lean realist optimist.
Yes, you are the most optimistic of this bunch.
I told you, I identified hard with this main character.
Mm-hmm. That's very cute.
She did remind me of you.
Oh. Yeah, she reminded me of you as well.
I just need like a little French magician in my pocket.
You know, I've never been annoyed with you in my whole life. So.
No.
That's certainly probably not true.
You're not as bad as Agnes when it comes to just the never-ending cycle of self-sacrifice.
You are not like that.
I'm sure you have been annoyed with me at some point.
Can't think of a single time.
Wow. Okay. Okay, we're getting too deep.
Yeah, Caitlin's perfect.
I'm going to leave this podcast.
She hates when we compliment.
Yeah. I'm basically yeah,
I don't like attention like that. I prefer to give other people compliments. I am really this main character. Ugh.
Yeah, you really are.
Like crawling out of her skin.
How about the setting of Montreal? And it's like the 1920s, 30s?
I think it's 1920s. Yeah. I loved it. I loved the, like, because I think like Heather Fawcett did such a good job of like historical fiction, but like add magic systems or add something where it's like mm-hmm. the setting, everyone's aware of it. Everyone's aware of fairies. Everyone's aware of magic. And it's just like an established norm. So it's like changing the past, but also keeping the past like other things in it.
It made me wonder if she set them in the same world, because I feel like feasibly magicians and fairy realms could all be, you know,
I could believe that
the world. I don't know. Maybe she'll tie them together and the Ravenwood will actually be like dark fairy or whatever.
I would be interested in that. Next book is
Emily Wilde's Journal of Dark Fairy or something.
Yeah.
I would be interested.
That'd be pretty good.
You should probably finish the rest of the series then.
Anyway, I also loved the setting in Montreal. I thought it felt really real to me. Like the language and the things they were eating and things they were doing and like the interactions, like everything felt very like French Canadian and very like 1920s. So
I've never had a desire to visit French Canada, but now I kind of do.
Yeah, I do.
It's a cool city, actually. I mean, I haven't been, but I've had friends sell me hard on Montreal. Like Montreal has fans.
I know that when we were in Calgary and in Banff, the French Canadians fit the stereotype and were not friendly at all.
Yeah.
They were Parisians, essentially.
Yeah.
It was unfortunate.
Yeah. But I did also love the magic system. The magic system isn't super built out, but it's built out enough that because the main character obviously doesn't know anything about magic. No one knows a ton about magic because it's kind of alluded to the fact that the government is suppressing knowledge about magic. But that's like very, very in the background. And so we interact with it pretty much exclusively through the male main character, who is like the most powerful magician of all time. And I thought that the Elderwood or whatever it's called.
Rivenwood.
There we go. Was so cool. As soon as that happened, I was like, I'm in. You got me. Like opening a portal to a mysterious universe with all these weird shadow creatures where you have to like harvest magic. Yes.
I like that magic had a cost.
Yes.
A significant one. And so these people were so excited by the idea of discovery that it's like how a scientist can lose themselves to their work.
Mm-hmm.
Mad scientist, mad wizard.
Right. That's the only reason I feel like there's going to be another book, because I kept mentioning the Fifth Fathom and we never get there. Mm-hmm. I don't know. The gray area for me was that essentially anything is possible if you're smart enough to figure it out. And I needed like a limit. Like, where's the limitation?
Yeah.
Apparently, I mean, it was like altering someone's mind was the limitation, but Havelock was also kind of like, so far.
Yeah, I think the limitation is the human mind at this point. And Havelock has a big brain.
But like, if he can just start an apocalypse, he could probably figure out how to like wipe someone's memory.
So. See, I really liked that because I like the idea of 19-year-old Havelock. You think of boys.
And why did you do it? Because I could.
Yes, exactly. You think of teenage boys who are just like, it was in my power and I wanted to see if I could do it. So I did. Yeah. Like it was just the logic was so sound that he was just like, I put it on a shelf because I wanted to see if I could do it. And then I proved I could. So I put it on a shelf. And then forgot about it because I'm a mess.
And then my equal twin.
And then my sister, who was angry that I have more power than her. I showed it to her because I thought like she would think it's cool. And then she steals it.
My bitch sister. Come on, mom. Stop it.
But I like the idea of the sister also getting into magic earlier in life. So she technically had less power, but at the same time, like had been deeper into it and had taken more tolls of her soul because she kept going to the Rivenwood. So by the time that he gets his magic, she is already fully grasped it into it and fully like has been like taken over by the Rivenwood. Yeah. So then like
he's giving himself away.
Yeah.
Both main characters are essentially raised by their siblings. Like they raise each other. And you see where like magic corrupted the one set and the other two are still very close.
Yeah.
And it's kind of like foil.
Well, you also see at the end that there is a potential redemption because she no longer has magic at the end.
I think.
Mm-hmm. We think.
Yeah.
See, they were open. It was a bow, but there were open endings.
But I feel like that should have given her parts of her soul back.
Maybe.
She's
just. Or she'll get her magic back. Yeah. Or maybe she'll fall apart.
But I like the idea of power corrupting and maybe giving it back.
Yeah. You guys just in Catherine's face just now with like a little frown, like, please.
I want a sibling reunited, like found family. It's fun.
It's not found family if you re-find your actual family.
I mean, still.
Yeah. Anyway, so I normally having a magic system that had so few clear boundaries would bother me. The reason it didn't in this book is because I felt like they framed magic as still sort of like an emerging science almost, because magicians had to live in secret and because they were so rare and because most magicians weren't super powerful.
They were always trying to one up each other, steal each other's stuff, not work together.
Right.
Or burn them down.
It was sort of like the Wild West. And so it was just independent people who kind of became experts, like the main characters, who really drove knowledge of magic. But there were a lot of things about it that even magicians didn't understand.
And it being single point of view of a person who knows nothing and is actively avoiding it.
Right. And is afraid of it.
That's predictable things. Like cats, to the extent cats are predictable.
I was about to say, cats are not magic, predictable.
Unpredictable. I mean, cats all fit in a sort of chaotic mold, though.
Still chaos.
Yeah. It's a lot less chaos than the magician living in her basement.
That's fair.
Yeah. Well, that brings us to Havelock, our male main character. And he's kind of this tragic boy whose family falls apart and he's a magician and his sister kind of falls apart and they end up like battling for the universe. What did you guys think of him?
Love a good misunderstood, morally gray man.
So morally gray. I knew he wasn't going to be the villain.
Like, no, yeah.
At the beginning.
Yeah.
Obvious, the Witch King was just a front, which I kind of love that he was just like, let people think what they think as long as I get to read my books.
He was like, as long as I get to do the shit I want to do, whatever.
He was actually just a hoarder.
He was literally a hoarder.
Yes.
I don't know. This is where you were mentioned. I don't think we needed the love story necessarily. I would have happily seen them become best friends. Because kind of is protective of him and they work together. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of sweet, like two misunderstood people. She finds love again and he finds someone who is like not afraid of him, sees him for who he is. Like, it's sweet. It wasn't necessary.
I really liked Havelock himself. To me, they gave sibling and I actually preferred sibling because it's also sort of like their relationships with their siblings and their sisters was so important to the story that it almost would have been like he gave up one sister, but he found another. And I feel like that thematically lines up better. I just wasn't a huge fan of the actual romantic dynamic in this story. And I thought it would have been better as more of a friendship tale.
Because it was sort of cringy. And it was supposed to be sort of cringy. Yeah. She's really good at that kind of romance, but.
Right.
Well, because they're both kind of socially awkward.
Yeah. So this was more like the found family, but they don't need to end up as literal family. And right. I don't know. Maybe they won't. Like, it's very much they're just both present at the end. But they did kiss at one point. So
I think they kissed twice.
Yeah.
It's a very chaste book, guys. No smut here.
No.
Very innocent, which is fine. I actually really like that. I feel like Heather Fawcett is just not doing the thing that like everyone is doing right now, which is refreshing. But I'm like, escape even further. They don't have to kiss. They can just be friends.
I would have been okay if there was no kissing and like just them interacting with one another.
And Emily Wilde, I kind of like the romance eventually. It gets a little weird in the third book, but I don't know. I like the just like two coexisting shopkeepers kind of vibe.
Mm-hmm.
The shop within a shop.
I love like the curmudgeonly genius kind of thing he had going on, but like chaotic genius, like everything's everywhere and he doesn't know where anything is. He's ADD. Like
it's very much the same male main character as Katabasis.
Yes, but likable.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Like nice. Has a soul.
Yes. Actually nice. Yeah. Not ruined from by academia. Not ruined by the Alderwood or Otherwood yet.
Rivenwood.
Rivenwood. Jesus. I don't
know. How do you forget it?
I think so many like books that have like something wood.
I don't know how authors keep inventing new names for things, but I'm like, that was a good one. Good job.
Yeah, it's a new one.
It's because some of these are actually taken from other things I've read. Like the Alderwood is from Over the Garden Wall.
Well, the Alder is also in One Dark Window.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very mystical books. Okay. We've already talked about this a little bit, but the main villain in the book is Valerie, who is the twin of Havelard. What did you guys think of
Havelock?
Havelock. Oh.
Sorry.
We're now you're bringing Dorian into this. Stop that.
Everything is mashing together in my brain. I actually find that when I listen to audiobooks, I really struggle to remember names because I've never looked at them. I've never seen them written out.
How? And she said, have luck with off like 30 times. Like,
yeah. That makes it even harder because I'm like, what letters was that? Like, I don't even know what name this is. I'm just trying to say it. And I'm just like,
sorry to the French people. I'm so sorry.
I cannot. Because I did not listen to this book. I read it. So I like,
didn't know it was Montreal for the first half of the book, Catherine.
Yeah, I just like I have butchered Americanized all these names because they're all in my head. So hearing you guys have to hear that, I'm like, oh my God.
It's Valerie.
Yeah. Yeah.
It was really beautiful when the lady said it. Sorry.
Mm-hmm. She did a really good job.
But I did get Havelock just because she said it 15 million times.
Oh, because he's in it a lot.
I'm sorry. I can't remember anything if I've never seen it. Like, if you speak it to me, it's never going in the vault. Like, anyway, the villain, Valerie, there's twin symbolism. It was interesting that she was sort of driven crazy by her ambition, partly, and her need to, like, compete with her sibling and not just by the magic. The magic ultimately sucked her under.
Essentially, she caused the apocalypse and was mad that her brother got the credit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, like, it was what? His spell, and she's so mad that it wasn't her spell. I'm like, girl.
And then people gave him credit for it because everyone knew that it was his spell.
Yeah. I did think she was a little two-dimensional. However, I admire a toxic sibling pair. I feel like they're always good. They shout out Sherlock, the iconic sibling rivalry. I just think it's really interesting. And I think I relate to it because even though I love my sisters very much, like there was definitely times when we were like World War III in our household. So I think I can see how things get toxic. And I think siblings make great villains because they know the hero so well.
I mean, she literally called his like library and trapdoor system as like a dragon with his clutch. And I'm like, that's literally so accurate. Dragons are hoarders. So is your brother.
Right. Yeah.
I don't know. I like that he got this reputation because she's doing all this bad stuff and he's just kind of like, great, no one will bother me.
And he's just putting out fires.
But suddenly has to care because Agnes appears with her cats and he's like, well, shoot, now we're all involved.
Right.
That he's allergic to. I love that he's allergic to cats.
Yes. He kind of just said, screw it. Good luck, guys.
Forces it on him. She's like, you'll be fine.
Oh, my God. Speaking of her throwing the cat at him in the past. Fucking genius.
Dude, okay, the past. And
then naming the cat Cataclysm because it was at the apocalypse. Are you kidding me?
That was so good.
I did not anticipate that until the very end when it was like actually happening. Like when we hear the anecdote about the lamp being stolen, did not put it together.
No, not at all.
Like third Harry Potter book. And I was like, wait, what?
Yeah. The oven.
The oven going back in time.
Put it together.
Not at all.
Okay. I knew the oven was going to be something, but did not expect that it was like a portal to the past.
Yeah. Which is part of why I think the ending of this book really got me and like why I really loved it so much is she really does bring back deep cuts from the book in really unexpected ways. Like everything really did matter.
His Majesty being captured did matter.
The pastries.
The pastries did matter.
Yeah.
The lantern did matter. This offhand comment about like, I was jumped by a random person and the lamp was stolen. He lied to her.
He did lie. He knew it was her the whole time.
Yeah, you have to rethink the entire book after you know that it was her. And you're like, oh, shit.
And he knew
something was coming because I latched onto that line where when he like saw her for the first time, he said, Agnes. I kept that in my head. And I was like, when's this coming up? And I was like, yeah, not how I thought it would come up, but excellent.
No. I very stupidly just thought he had a crush on her already.
I just thought like, oh, Yannick told him her name.
Yeah.
Yannick? How is it spelled?
Y-A-N-N-I-C-K.
Oh, see, I thought it would have a J because she called him Yannick.
Yeah. Just Yannick.
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 Yannick, that sweet bumbling sidekick.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of hoping for the Yannick Havelock romance. Oh, I mean, she even asked him and he was like, no.
The magician's apprentice and the magician.
I actually like their dynamic more. It felt a little bit sexier to me.
Okay.
Audiobook, it made it seem like Yannick had a crush on him.
Yes. I was like, the magician and his assistant and his found family.
How do you feel this way about him? He's like, oh, no. Actually, I don't feel that way about anybody ever.
Asexual. We love an asexual king.
Mm-hmm. But I was kind of like, a little queer wizard romance.
<I'm> living. Okay. So the ending of the book is pretty good. However, it does end up getting pretty cheesy, in my opinion.
I mean, yeah. It's cozy fantasy.
A little
fantasy.
Too hard and confused for me.
Elise really does the most, guys. And then she gets knocked out for it.
The knockout was very funny.
Speaking of a good sister who's really down for whatever. It was crazy. But I was like, okay, you should have stopped at like the evil guys losing their powers. I didn't need all the other. Everything is working out perfectly for everyone else.
I mean, yeah, the whole like, now they can't raid the shop thing. Okay, here's what I secretly hoped would happen. I secretly hoped Havelock would lose his magic too. And then he would be saved from going deeper in the Ribbonwood. And then when the cops came, they couldn't find anything because there was no magic. That's kind of what I expected. But Havelock without his magic would be depressed. So
yeah, I didn't expect him to lose his magic. What I expected is the entire like underground would have lost its magic with the lantern. So like when something they went like down there, nothing would be magical.
Laurent's a jerk.
Yeah, Laurent's a jerk.
He's a jerk.
He ended up with the cat that screams.
I love that she gave him ambulance saying like, you owe me one.
Yeah, this is karma that he had to take the most annoying cat.
It wasn't like,
why would he get a redemption arc? Why did we have to have a redemption arc for him? Let him just be a shit.
That's not a redemption arc. That's karma.
He came and apologized and she forgives him. That's a redemption arc.
You know, she said, I see an opportunity to get my most annoying cat home. It was altruistic.
I did love her response to it because that is honestly the best revenge.
Yes.
Okay, well, which cat did you guys think was the most like y'all's cats? We know who his majesty is.
My favorite cat, though, is Thoreau.
Thoreau's my favorite cat, too. I mean, his majesty's close up there.
Epic.
I don't know. I don't think
really we haven't seen a villain cat like that since Lucifer in Cinderella.
Yeah.
Yes, I loved the villain cat. It was so good.
I don't think any of the cats really match my cats.
Dang. No. Lynx might be Lucy.
Yeah. But Lucy doesn't like people.
Yeah, Lynx didn't super either, except for the one person.
She batted out of the cage, yeah.
Like, your cats might be Lynx and her brother.
Yeah, because that's the issue, is, like, Lucy would be Banshee but loud, in the sense of, like, she's loud and she makes a lot of noise with me. But, like, both of them are such scaredy cats, so they're not, like, Banshee or Thoreau.
No, Millie and Banshee. Cast Millie in the movie, guys.
Yes, Millie and Banshee.
Yeah, perfect. When she was describing her at the beginning, it's just like total empty head. I was like, come off.
Wants to be closest to the person who is like allergic to cats.
And makes perfect sense.
The first time Millie met Casey, who is allergic, she dipped her tail straight in her queso. So
yeah, she tried to poison me.
Yeah. But like, everybody falls for her eventually. But she can be secretly a little spicy, just like Banshee is at the end, and she largely doesn't make noises.
I love that Banshee took an ear out of a tip of the ear out of his majesty.
Mm-hmm.
Banshee said, no, sir.
You're not touching my person.
I know. I loved that.
Havelock is her person.
I actually put that in my review. I was like, extra points for the cat duel. Like,
yeah.
A part of the major epic final battle scene is that the two cats fight.
And it's the two cats, the dumb one that got bullied all the time and the bully.
I also just love leading up to that. All the cats are loose in the shop because Havelock's trying to feed them all. It was so cute.
Yeah, it was really cute.
He was a disaster.
He was.
Okay, well, I think that's everything. Do you guys have book recommendations?
I mean, The Spell Shop comes to mind for a very like cozy fantasy, like
cozy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously Emily Wilde, but
I don't know why, but some of the magic system, this is like the literal opposite, but some of it made me think of the Atlas Six.
Really?
Yeah.
Just like the like passionate drive to discover all things in the universe, you know, and like accidentally creating the apocalypse, very Atlas Six.
I mean, yes, that did happen in Atlas Six.
But also I don't recommend that book. I don't know.
Okay. For the dog sidekick alone, I want to recommend Lessons in Chemistry, just for another book that has like a really important like animal
630
character. And also, of course, Howl's Moving Castle, shout out. But I also want to recommend a book that we're reading in like just a few weeks that I'm really excited about, called The Tainted Cup, which is a murder mystery that also has very cozy vibes. And the dynamic between the main characters in that book is very similar to the dynamic here, with a sort of like on the spectrum grumpy professor, and then like this kind of happy-go-lucky, like underestimates himself investigator.
Although the world is a lot more dark in the
It's definitely not as cozy because it is a murder mystery, but it still has like a similar vibe to me.
And there's spore plants that are trying to kill you.
Yeah, very interesting magic system in that one.
I've not started this one yet.
I like it.
But I'm intrigued.
It's really good. The magic system's interesting. You'll enjoy it, I think.
Hmm. I mean.
But it's darker than cozy.
Usually is.
Okay, what was the book with the two main characters who write on connected?
Okay, that's what I was
Divine Rivals.
About to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, that I was about to say that one because I was looking at our book list. It's, yes, very, very similar.
Very PG romance.
The gods, but like old-timey magic system for sure.
Yeah, believable kind of 1920s setting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, these are just our opinions. We love to hear y'all's too. If you want to slide into our DMs, you can do so at Busy Girls Pod pretty much everywhere. We also have a website, busygirlspod.com, where you can see a bunch of our past book recommendations and episodes. And please give our podcast a rating and a review, especially if you love cats.
Catherine makes her cat dance right now.
Yeah. Charlie says hi. And with that, I'm Catherine.
I'm Caitlin.
And I'm Casey. Thanks for listening. And when you get a chance, take a break with the Busy Girls Book Club.